You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to start this show. We didn't have an intro tonight, but maybe next time we will. We'll get our shit together, don't worry. Anyways, we're going to welcome our singer-songwriter guest, Michael Zygon. Michael Zygon, say hello.
Hello.
How are you, man?
Good, dude. So good to see you.
So good to see you too, bro. It sounds like you had an exciting time at the baseball game today. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, so I did a lot of stuff today, a ton of stuff, but I just wanted to make sure I had some time like to do something where I was doing nothing. So I made sure I took in, like, there's a local team here called Long Island Ducks. They're actually really good. Like, you wouldn't think, like, our, like, minor league baseball team is dominant, but they've won, like, four championships so far since they've been around, since, like, 2004. And, like, they won one last year, and they've just been, like, destroying teams. They've already clinched the playoffs. They're, like, a really good baseball team. And they play, like, 15 minutes from my house.
Do you see any scouts at games? I'm sure you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a whole box there that try to scout these guys because they're an Atlantic League team. Like, it's like, a really small league, but they've been using that league to try out all the new rules that they're putting into, like, Major League Baseball now. That they've, like, done, like, the, like, robotic umpires and all that stuff, and, like, which I hope I never see, but, like, all this, all these rules and stuff, they use it. It's all connected to the MLB. Actually, there's a pitcher right now that's on the Mets that's from the Long Island Ducks. His name is Rich Hill.
Oh, that's crazy. Did you see him when he was playing? Double A, right?
It's not even double or single or triple A. It's, like, below that. It's just a random league. Real baseball. I love going to those games. It's great. It's
like, dude, I just love sports. I love sports so much. And there was two things I missed during the pandemic. It was sports and music, but sports got their act together, and they were still playing sports, just, you know, in bubbles or doing it in a way that they could still do it. But we lost music altogether. So tell me first, how did you kind of spend your time during the pandemic? I know you went back to New York. When did you go back to New York?
Yeah. Okay. So, like, when I moved back to LA, you mean? From LA back to New York, I mean to say.
Yeah.
I think that was sorry. You drinking milk?
I'm drinking an iced coffee.
Okay. Sorry, bro.
It does look like milk, though. You're like, are you drinking milk, man? I should have said, it does a body good, bro. That's how I've got these guns.
What's talking about, dude? Wait, okay, what was this? Oh, yeah. So I moved back. I think it's like 5 years now. Almost 5 years. This February, I think it'll be 5 years. And I moved back from LA to New York. It feels like not that long ago. But I moved back from LA to New York. Huge adjustment.
How so?
I mean, dude, New York's a different place. And to think like this, like, one of the big reasons I moved back here is because my dad really needed my help. So I moved back to help him out, and he was in bad shape. And luckily he got better. He's in bad shape again now, but he was in bad shape. And that's the whole reason I moved back to New York, was to help him out. And I came into, like, I came in from a situation in LA where, one, living in LA is, like, is wonderful. It's like a dream. You know, you're living there. I was on my own. I didn't really have anybody else to worry about except for me and my cat, you know? So it's like, I have that world. And, like, you know, I'm playing a good amount. I'm playing Vegas, like, every week or every other week. Plus, I'm working over at LAMA, or now Lockham, whatever you want to call it, Los Angeles College of Music, working over there, and then doing all my other random gigs. And then, you know, I was helping at the time record all the stuff for their online curriculum, so I was super busy.
Right.
And then I come back here and I have zero work.
Right.
Fucking February. So it's the middle of February, so it's freezing cold. I come back into, like, nor'easters and these, like, brutal winter storms from LA's beautiful weather to this. And, like, everything was just haywire for me. And I came into, like, a really different situation that I was in LA. And but luckily, like, you know, I was able to now at this point, over time, I've built, like, a huge community here. Like, a massive community of musicians, just basically friends. I've started music programs at two or three different bars and out here. And, like, last year was one of the worst years of my life. And I think for a lot of us, especially a lot of musicians and people that are entertainers, I mean, like, I went from killing it And I had everything booked out for the year. And I'd been working on this these summer gigs in New York. There's a place called Fire Island. It's an island off of here. And it's just like the busy season when you're in Fire Island. And, you know, I'll play five, maybe six gigs a week. There was one weekend, I think in 5 days, I played 9 gigs. Ripped it. You know, crushed it, but made so much money that, you know, that I didn't have to work for like another week. You know, it was just great. And that's like what I expected to do last year. Now I'm doing that now, which is great, but I expected to do that last year. And then I went to LA, recorded an album in the studio. Evan Chud now, I don't know if you remember him, but he went to Lama. He was a bass student. He opened his own studio called The Spacement, which is awesome. Such a nice place. Went there, recorded everything. And then from there, like, we were like talking about the pandemic at that point. My friend Ryan Braditich was in China, came back because we had talked about this. I was up at like 5 a.m. and I had this idea. I'd been out drinking.
He was playing for like some Chinese pop group, right?
Yeah, the huge pop stars in China. And so I texted him and I was like, dude, just seeing how he's doing. Him and I were really close friends for a long time. And then we decided to say, dude, I really want to record with you. I want to go back to LA. I've had this idea for months, like half this year, and I want to do this. And then he was telling me this and that. This was like in the summer, and now it's in the winter in February again. And he comes back from China, goes to LA. We meet up. The boys come through. We record this awesome album, and like literally just thrown together. Like the boys just showed up. Like all my friends.
This all during the pandemic?
No, this is before. This is like February, right? Right before. I think it was like the second week of February. So wow. We're talking about the pandemic. Things are happening more in China. Nothing is shut down yet. You know, we flew no problem. There was no issues. No one was sick that I knew. Right. Me and my girlfriend, I brought her with me. We go home back to New York. And then the next week, 2 weeks later, I'm playing a wedding in Mexico. My buddy Frank out here, who owns multiple restaurants, great guy. He was like, dude, we were already friends. I was going to go to his wedding anyway. He's like, if you play, I'll take care of your accommodation. You know, just get yourself here. I'll take care. So I'm like, hell yeah, dude. Anything for you. Don't worry about it. We'll do it. So I go. Literally, I play him down the aisle with his wife. We have a great time. My girlfriend and I go 5 days before to do like a little mini vacation before the wedding. It's the best trip. Such an amazing trip. We start hearing stuff back home while we're there in March. This is like March now. Middle of March, right? Right when shit hit the fan. In New York, I have my buddies on my group text. I put my phone away. I said, nobody touch your phones. I said, listen, this is going to ruin our trip. So we finally turn them on the day before. We go home, and then we see everything. Oh, no, this is bad. Lines at customs. We got to go through customs. Luckily, we made it back with no problem. But literally, I come back. My phone blows up. I have a lessons business, a music lessons business that I had been working on for about 4 years that I had up to about 33, 35 students. 90% canceled for the rest of the time being. They said, going forward, we can't do lessons. We don't know what we're going to do. People were losing their jobs. Like, people were scared they're going to lose their job. They didn't know how the hell they're going to pay for it. So I'm like, okay, you know, we'll hold off for a couple of weeks. We're thinking 2 weeks, right? Whatever. Then all of my gigs for my calendar, what I was talking about, like the summer I'm having now, I had it all booked out. I booked that stuff out so far. Everybody cancels. I mean, dude, it was everything. I was in Mexico having the time of my life, playing a wedding, having a great time, just record an album, come back to New York. Everything shut down. New York becomes the epicenter for the pandemic.
And are you in the city? Are you in the city?
No, I'm not. Thank God. I do not want anything to do with New York City. I live about like by car. I can get to Queens in like 30 minutes.
Okay.
It's not that far away. Like, I'm about 30 minutes away from Queens without traffic. And like a train ride, I'm one train just straight to Manhattan from where I live is like the main hub for travel from Manhattan into Long Island.
And apparently it's the main hub for cavemen, too.
Yeah. Like, you could talk. Like, you could even talk to me. This beard came from the pandemic, right? Because I just started growing it. And then I just started, like, shaving it a little bit. And then I shaved it off once. And I was like, nah.
That's good on you, dude. That's good on you, man.
So now I've been bearding it up. I'm actually getting it trimmed down tomorrow big time. So it's funny that you said that, yeah, because it's starting to get a little intense.
Well, so did you finish the record? Did you finish the record with Ryan?
Yeah. Well, this is what happened. So the album, I finished it in 2 days. I went out to LA. I literally had almost no plan. My plan was this: get the musicians together, get the money together, get everybody wherever they're staying. Because I tried to get Seth to come, but Seth didn't come. unfortunately. I was trying to get Seth from Iowa. But, like, I had Will. Will film the whole experience. He's killing it. Will is crushing. I had the guys come through. You know, Andrew Moore played on it. My buddy Andrew. Mikella Landers, she crushed a song. Like, everyone just came through for me. And there was a bunch of guys on it. Evan did a great job at the studio. Ryan came through. My buddy Jerry. Spencer went on drums. The guys just came in. A bunch of guys from college. One of my friends from his wife was a dancer in a dance company I worked with, Lineage Performing Arts Center, and we were all real close. So I said, "Hey guys, you know, come through." Then one guy, Brian Hargrove, he played keys as well. That guy's a beast. Roy Hargrove's son. The guy's,
I was about to ask for those relations.
He's an absolute killer. The kid's a killer. And so these guys, we all come together. I went out. I got a whole bunch of food. I bought a ton of beer. A whole bunch of weed, and then we all came through together. It's legal in LA, so it's okay. We all came together, and like I said, listen, guys, I have everything here for you, whatever you want. And I made sure I paid everybody. I said, I don't really like, I have ideas for songs, right? But some shit we're just gonna hit. Like, I don't know. I've already come up with ideas, and I gave nobody any music before. I didn't give any demos to anybody. I said, we're just gonna hit it. And it made for the most beautiful musical experience I've ever been a part of in my entire life, because awesome. All these guys, because I know all these guys and they're all killers. I mean, they're just, I know that they don't need anything. They don't need any guidance. They don't need anything. I'll cue things. You know, a lot of our songs were one take, and I was also improvising vocals. There's two songs on the album that are completely improvised vocally.
Wow.
They're improvised vocally, and they came out great. I think I sent one to you, The Truth. That was the last song on the album.
Yeah, I remember that.
But there's a couple of tunes on there. They're just completely – and at the end of the song, I'm just in tears because I was like, wow, that was just such a good moment. It's like a musical. If you see the video, there's a video on YouTube. But it's just – it's like they're destructive guys. The guys just kill. And so it was just in the spacement at Evans, and it's such a nice space to hang out and make a record. And, like, I'm just with all my friends. It's like we were right back in college and right back in music school. But now we were all actually good. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like now, you know, at the time, I think I was 28. You know, I was in music college when I was 18. I was an idiot. I didn't know anything. You knew me. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I was a kid. You know, I graduated. Well,
there's a seasoning that you get. I think a lot of that, it starts when you're out of school.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you can't really develop that when you're learning. It's when you begin doing. And that's when you become seasoned, you know.
Exactly. And the boys had all been doing the same thing. Nobody had stopped playing. Nobody had stopped working. You know, everybody got better. And I remember, you know, me and Ryan specifically had hung out multiple times through the years. You know, he'll come to New York every once in a while. Him and I went to this sick music stop in Brooklyn, and we jammed. This was years ago. And he was there for his dad's birthday. His dad's a killer classical bass player. And he was playing at Carnegie Hall for his birthday. The guy's a monster. Ryan's dad. And so we went through. He came through, and we went to Brooklyn. We hung out in the daytime, and then we headed over to this vintage music shop, and they had these little private rooms. I used to go there all the time. I bought a couple instruments from them, so I knew the guys. I said, and so him and I took one of the rooms, and we jammed for like an hour, 2 hours. Well, yeah, it was great. And I remember at the end, like, we were both talking to each other, and he's like, dude, you got so much better. And I was like, bro, you too. And that was two.
Isn't that, like, the best part of having, like, musician comrades that, yeah, like, that you grow with and you see? Like, it's really cool because you're going to see everybody start getting bigger gigs, doing bigger things, and it just is, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it just – everybody elevates and ascends at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's cool that you got together and reconnected because you had the connection already, but everybody's better. So you're making more magic.
Yeah, better and also like more mature and just have like less ego too. We both are, because like when you're young and you're insecure about how you play or how you're doing and you want to be the best or better, you have all these aspirations. Like sometimes that stuff gets in the way of you being a human being. And I learned so much more, and I've been humbled in so many ways over time, like especially last year, that like, you know, at that point when we were together, when we got into the studio, like none of that stuff had happened yet, but I still like was on a different level as a musician and a person and just a little more grown up. And we all came together, and we were able just to crush this album in 2 days. We actually had 10 tracks that came out in 2 days. Whittled it down, I think, to seven. It was seven, I think, we whittled it down to.
And you guys, you were mixing too around that same time?
No. We mixed afterwards. I said, listen, I want to get everything down as good as I can. I don't want to do a lot of punching. I punched in like one solo. Ryan punched in a bass part because he had something he needed to fix. And then afterwards, I have my buddy here, Rocco. Rocco, and he lives in Brooklyn. And he's also an amazing musician, amazing person, one of my closest friends. And he then mixed everything. He's an awesome mixing engineer. And so he, audio engineer in general, and he mixed my album. And then I have a guy out in L.A. who mastered it. I can't remember the dude's name, unfortunately, but I have his number, so I know I had him up. he was great. And the whole thing, it just went off great. Like, it took me a really long time to get it out after I had already recorded it because the pandemic hit. And then I was like, well, I lost all my, like I said, my business with my, like what you asked before was the whole question of what you did during the pandemic.
Right.
I lost my business that I've been building for 4 years. I lost all my gigs except for one for the summer. That was it. I had one gig all summer. Now, like I said, I had 9 2 weeks ago. Last week I had 6. You know, it's regularly. I do 2 every Saturday no matter what. And there, I have 3 residencies, and then I have usually 2 to 3 other gigs that are already filled in at different places during the week. I have a gig tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like that. So it went from me having that idea to 1 gig a week, and I couldn't afford anything. I was broke. I got a job working at a grocery store right away because I was afraid about what was going to happen. It was terrible money. That was a really low point for me. And then after that, my buddy was working at...
But you know what the important thing is? You kept on hustling.
I never stopped. I never stopped working. I never stopped trying as hard as I could to keep my head above water and pay the bills. And... you know, do it to help my dad out, do it for myself. You know, especially I couldn't just sit at home, and because like I wasn't able, I did not qualify for unemployment. So like I was like, I didn't have any, no one gave me a dime during the pandemic. I didn't get any unemployment, nothing.
Good for you.
First I was doing that. And then after I got done doing that stuff, my friend hit me up and he said, I'm working, my buddy who I surf with all the time, my buddy Casey, he hits me up. He's like, hey dude, you're looking for drivers at FedEx. Like, can you want to do that? And I was like, not really, but yeah, I guess so. I was like, how much do you make? He's like, $700 a week. And I was like, really? Okay. It's way better than the $200 I'm making at the grocery store.
Right.
So I started working at FedEx, and I did that for almost a year. And that's a brutal job. If anybody out there is, a dick to their delivery guy, don't do that. They're actually like, they're working hard.
And I love FedEx too, man. Like they're actually like super reliable. It's not like the US Postal Service where it's like, it may or may not get there. FedEx is like, it'll get there. That's awesome.
And, you know, that was an ass kicking of a job. And like last year was the most humbling year experience of my life, you know? And then like, I remember I used to be on gigs and I was so used to playing gigs and I would play so many during the week. And I would be like frustrated on it, like, oh, I got to do this gig. Like, oh, I got to haul the gear, like all this. After that, last year, I'm just like, hell yeah. Let me carry everything.
Yeah, right.
I'll carry everything. I don't care. What? Okay, whatever. No problem. Let's go. I won't care. Let me do these gigs. All I want to do is just take care of this. And it was, it just completely changed my outlook on me being a musician. So... it definitely helped me out, but
let's play something from the record. What do you want to play first?
Oh, I forgot what I sent you. Well, the truth that one's one of the, you know what? Play pick your head up. That's right. That's a good one. That would be like more of like the single kind of on the album. It's with Mikella Landers. I wrote that song before. That was one of the few songs I actually wrote before I went to LA. None of the guys had played it before you hear this recording. I think this was like our second or third take. I was singing it by myself and Mikella was in the other room. And she was listening. I told her that day. I just told her to show up. And she was like, all right, I'll show up. No problem. I called her like the day before. I said, I'm going to be in LA this week. Can you come in this day to the studio? Yeah. And then she sat in the other room, wrote her verse, and came in and hit it in like 2 takes, I think it was.
Wow. That's awesome.
And also on this tune, we're sharing a mic. It's all live. It's 1 take, except for my solo. I had to redo it because I screwed it up. But the solo is the only punch. Everything else... Her and me are sharing a microphone. If you want to see it, it's on YouTube. Saucy Valentine is the name of the group. And if you go there, you can see us. We're actually sharing a mic. Everything is 100% live, except for the solo. That I took again, but it was one take.
You said it's called Saucy Valentine's?
Saucy Valentine. Just Saucy Valentine.
Love it. All right, here's Pick Your Head Up by Saucy Valentine.
All right. Spaceship Explosions. Working out of changes, disregarding others, fighting with my brothers, sisters disrespecting, all of this infecting. How can we be right when it's so wrong? So pick your head up. Going down, oh, pick your head up and look around. See what's slipping away from us now. Oh, pick your head up and look around. Do you really see what's going down? Oh, pick your head up, look around. See what's slipping away from us now.
Slipping away, yeah, we're slipping away.
Yeah, man, that was groovy, dude. That was saucy, as I should say.
It is somewhat saucy, yeah.
And you can feel the vibe. There's definitely a live energy to it. It's got this kind of like improvisational thing to it, which I love. Very cool.
Yeah, it's got that feel to it. It's funny that version isn't actually the version that's on the album. I think I accidentally sent that, which isn't even a big deal because. Well, there's only like a slight difference. There's like one little different thing. Like in the beginning, I'm not saying any words. Like I think that's like really the only difference. And I think like there's one little vocal thing that's fixed. But besides that, that's the tune, and that's how it was. It was one take all the way through.
But I like the talking at the beginning.
Yeah, me too. The math took it out. He kept taking them out, and I was like, can you leave that? And then he left it on a few of them. But that one he took it out. I was like, oh wait, this isn't the right version. But kind of is the right thing. That's how it's supposed to be. You know what I mean?
There you go. Now you're thinking like a true artist, dude. You're like,
well, that's how it's supposed to be. That's how it came off the floor. You know what I mean? Just like that.
Well, what I love is like, you can feel that. Like what I love about rehearsing is like, I'll bring in a new song and there's an energy when you rehearse it, when it's new. Yeah. It's like, there's excitement. Everybody knows it's new. Everybody's finding a groove and you can hear that in the recording.
Yeah. Which,
something I never almost do on a record, not because I don't want to do it, because I'm like so worried about time when I'm in a studio. I'm like constantly like this, like every second counts, you know? So
yeah, I know how
like,
to do it.
But I love like when it's like, it just feels loose. It's tight and it's loose at the same time, which is.
The boys are great. And you know, what's great is that there's actually two keyboard players on that track, on all the tracks on the album. Except for one side. Oh, you know what? I should have sent you some of the ones without keys, but it's all right. There's only one without keys.
The guitar solo?
Yep. That's all me.
Awesome. I love the tone. What did you play through?
I played through Blues Junior. That's just 12-inch speaker. It's what I always use. And then I have some really, really freaking nice pedals I have now. There's this great boutique guitar store that opened up like a 5-minute drive from my house. Not even a mile away. It's called South Shore Guitar Boutique right here on Long Island. It's in North Babylon. The place is so good. It's also really bad that they open because they spend so much money there. Like, it's like here having all boutique stuff you've never heard of. That's just like crazy. And the guys there know me now, and they'll be like, because I do some demo stuff for them too. They'll be like, hey, Mike, can you play? Because I play a ton of like funk now, more like funk and blues, and since they sing, they'll be like, can you, you know, because they have like these guys that come in and do that like super crazy guitar stuff that like I can never touch, like dropping crazy things, like very weird, like progressive stuff. And I'm like more of the like blues, funk, R&B guy. You know what I mean? Like that song just was. Right. So I go through there and they give me all these awesome instruments to play. And one that they put in my hands one day is the one I played there, is a Reverend Buckshot. Reverend, they make really great guitars. I don't think I have it in my room right now. It's not here. It's not upstairs. But there's a, It's just a phenomenal guitar, and the thing is so versatile. And I bought just record this album with. I was like, I gotta bring this thing with me. Because I was gonna bring two guitars to get some different tones, and I was like, this does everything. And they put it in my hands, and I fell in love with it. I was actually looking for a gift from my my friend's husband. He's a guitar player. She said, I gotta take you with me, Mike. You gotta play this for me because I'm not a guitar player. I have no idea what to do. So I said, okay, I'll go with you. And so we picked them that up, and they only sell for like $1,200, something like that. $1,300, and they're great. They're made in a place here. Like I think there's six or seven guys who put them together and set them up. All the parts come from Korea, and so like they're well made there. But they're made at a cheaper price point. So, but they all have like nice roasted maple necks on them, lock and tuners, hardtail bridges. Like just everything that like.
What's the type of guitar again? What's the name of it?
It's called Reverend. The instrument, the brand is called Reverend. You'd really like their stuff.
I'm sure. Sounds absolutely, like
the Buckshot is a guitar that you would really enjoy, and it's like it's easy to afford. You know, it's $1,200, and you have a perfect guitar. It stays in tune like crazy. Got a nice beefy neck on it. You know, thing just rips.
It's so funny because I know you can relate to this. This is why I tell you this. So I think that before you left, I was like, dude, I've got all the pedal boards I need. I've got four pedal boards. I don't need any more pedal boards. Fast forward to, let me see, that's pedal board number 5 right there, and it's sitting on top of pedal board number 6. So
yeah, you're like a pedal freak, dude.
Man, I'm a pedal. Well, you know what? It's funny because David Ryan Harris, he posted about his pedal guy. And I was like, dude, I've always wanted to know who his pedal guy is, because I always see David's boards and they're always switched with pedals all the time. And I'm like, dude, I never do that. And that just takes too much discipline. But he said that this guy, Josh Schreibus, who I'm going to give a little shout out to, he's Pearl Jam's guitar tech. Cool. And he's also David's. So he goes on tour with Mayer. He goes on tour with Pearl Jam. He goes on tour with a bunch of people. And, man, I sent him a message. And I was like, yo, I want to, you know, do like a Hendrix trio. And I've got like these pedals I'm thinking about putting together. I want you to put together a Hendrix pedal board. And he's like, man, I'm down. So he put together my whole pedal board for the Hendrix trio. Wow. And then I was like, man, I want to do another pedal board that's like Prince influenced. And he did another pedal board. And, dude, when you see it, you will love it, because, you know, you can appreciate the handiwork that comes.
Yeah.
Somebody does something right. And he does it so right. And so, yeah, man, it's like the reason I say this is, like, I really want to believe I'm at the point where I don't need any more gear. And I'm trying so hard to not get any more guitars, no more pedal boards, nothing. It's like, yeah, it's not true, because I'm always looking, even when I'm not looking. So even you telling me, I'll probably Google that guitar when we finish this interview, and I'll be like, oh my God, it's
Dude, you should get one. Don't be a pussy, get one. Dude, they come in great colors, too, and they shred. And it's great because, like, they have a five-way switch on them, I think they do. No, it's a three-way. Three-way switch, but they have this, like, bass roll-off that also controls the gain a little bit. So, like, I was using it on solo games, me just singing and playing, or, like, duos with me and my sister playing and singing. And literally, I would just bring it to different positions, and then I would roll off that bass roll-off knob, which is in such a nice place, roll it off a little bit. So then I could play, and then on the solo, instead of me having to have any pedals, I would just turn it all the way up and switch to, like, the single-coil Telecaster pickup on the back and just rip. And it was, like, it was just so refreshing to play that instrument all the time.
You're like, yes. It's like, there's something about when you have all your gear.
Lock in. And, like, I started selling some of my other guitars after I bought that one. I was like, I don't need this. And I sold off a few, because that just, it did it for me. But then, you know, like you said, like, looking but not looking, I did the same thing. Like, when I went to the same store, and I went there, it was like the first time I went after the pandemic when they opened up again. And it's like a super small store. A lot of the days you have to go by appointment, but there's like 3 days a week you can just walk in. So I went on an appointment day, and they know me, so they just let me in, and talking with the boys, and it's a father-son who owns the store, and he put, like, there's these weird guitars, and he puts one of them in my hands, this weird thing, this strange thing. It looks like it's covered in fondant, like matted colored guitar. It's an acoustic electric with this strange sound hole that's like an oval up here, made of carbon fiber. There's no wood on the guitar at all. And it's a 7/8. And I'm like, what is that? He's like, my kid. He goes, trust me. When I bought this guitar in, I thought of you because how much you play at the beach, how much you play and out, because I play outdoors in the beach in salt air, salty air and a high humidity environment 3 days a week without every time outside, plus the street fairs I play. So he hits me up and he says, he gives it to me and says, play. I said, oh, come on, man. Like, in his nice store where he has guitars that are, you know, $15,000 on the wall. He goes, take it. Just play it. I played it. Fell in love. I ordered one that day. I was like, get me a white one. He said, you don't want a blue one or a black one? I said, I can't play a blue or black guitar standing in the sun in the summertime. This thing didn't be 800 degrees.
Right.
I bought one right away. And it's called the Lava Me. You can even buy it on Amazon. They're $800. This, I want to buy a second one now, just in a different color. They make them in every color under the sun. I got the white one because it's not hot in the summer, but they can withstand temperatures up to like 280 degrees without warping. There's no trust on it, but then the humidity up to 98%, 90-something%, something stupid. And so I played at the beach. There's no rust on it. There's no corrosion. I've destroyed so many guitars from playing at the beach.
Right.
Really nice Gibson J45 ruined it.
Oh, really? So
it's not completely ruined, but like I can't play at the beach anymore. But like there's guitars because like I want to play the guitars I like. I don't want to, I'm not the guy who wants to baby it. I don't want to leave it sitting around inside. You know, if I'm playing that many gigs a week, I want some workhorse. And this thing kills and everyone sees it and they freak out. And you can plug it in to charge You charge it in the wall. You don't have to use batteries anymore.
What I love about you, Mike, is like, I remember you coming into one of our songwriting lessons long ago, and you brought the flashback delay, and you were showing me on your phone you could use the app.
The tone prints. Yeah, I remember.
I remember. I was like, I don't need that. And then, like, maybe 3 months later, I was like, oh, let me get this the big version so I can do the same thing on a big version and have a looper and all this stuff. And, man, it's sitting in – I've used it so much, and I use it all of my shows. Those are great pedals.
I had mine for years. It was when I moved back here. I played a show in Brooklyn at this great venue, and I had such a good show. It was such a good show, and the place was packed out. Like, it was awesome. Right off the Williamsburg Bridge. It was like the second year I was in New York. And I packed up my pedal board. I packed up all my stuff. And my buddy's girlfriend was wasted. Thank God he broke up with this girl. She was a psychopath. Got hammered drunk and started a fight in the bar. And things are flying. My buddy runs, and he's my best friend. So I go after him and say everything. While I was gone, someone stole my pedal board when I went inside. They picked it up off the side of the street and they jacked it. And I didn't even realize the confusion. And I come back out, we pack up the car, and, you know, I just thought it was already in the vehicle. You know what I mean? Because I was already loading my gear. I thought I already put it in. And then, like, it was either way, whoever took it was long gone. Like, because I wasn't even inside for, like, 10 minutes, maybe, you know, getting her out of there and everything. And I'm like, Jesus. I was like, dude, you need to break up with this girl, right? That's what I said to him that night. You know, we leave, we go home.
She cost me a pedal board, man.
I didn't even know that at the point. I get home, and I'm unpacking the gear, taking the stuff out, and I'm like, where the hell is my pedal board? I call the venue. I say, hey, guys, am I an idiot? Did I leave it in the green room? Last time I saw it, it was there, and then I brought it outside. They say, no, man, there's no pedal board here. We don't have anything. It was all wrapped up. It had my name on it and my phone number just in case it got lost. You know, nothing. They say nothing. And then I realize, I'm like, it was on the street. Fuck, it was on the street in Brooklyn. Some asshole probably took it. You know, the amp's too heavy. Pedal board's in a bag.
Right.
And it was a small one. It was only my... You know, it was like a wah, my flashback delay. I had an overdrive, a compressor, and that was it. You know, it was very bare bones, so it was very light. So whoever took it, they just picked it up and just walked off with it. I was heartbroken. I was heartbroken. And I didn't have enough money to replace all the stuff at the point because I just moved back to New York and I was kind of building my life again.
Oh, man, that breaks my heart, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, dude, it was the worst. There was a part of me I wanted to cry. I was like, man, I built that pedal board when I moved to LA, and that was like, I got all those pedals when I was young, you know, and I kind of figured my way out, and I bought and sold and found the right ones for me. But, you know, now I have a phenomenal setup. You know, it's very simple.
What did you use for overdrive for your solo on that last song?
It is a Jackson Audio not called the Infinity. It's by Jackson Audio. It's an overdrive. I'm trying to remember exactly the name of it. Jackson Audio is it's a small company, boutique guitar company. And I'm trying to remember exactly. Oh, the Bellstar. It's called the Bellstar. It is an overdrive. It's like a low gain overdrive. And so you can really control it with that, but it makes it so your notes don't get lost. And like, you can play chords with it. So I really wanted it so I can play like those like really funky, like ninth dominant chords with it, with the little overdrive, give it a little bite without losing the notes within the chord. So it's a super clean overdrive. That makes sense.
That's cool. Yeah. I love that.
Get that great tone with it. It was that. And then I actually have this really cheap delay that I'm in love with. I got from TC Electronics, same person who makes that flashback. TC Electronics just makes good pedals all together. I think it was like a $50 pedal or something I got it for. And it was after my pedal board got stolen. I went, Guitar Center had some deal with buy these two TC Electronic pedals, you get them for $100. So it was worth $50. It was that and some crappy overdrive I got rid of. But that pedal, it's called the Echo Brain, and it's phenomenal. So it's the Echo Brain. I don't know if I had any reverb on the amp. I don't think I did. I think I just went with the reverb in the studio. I think I just let it go afterwards. No, I did have some reverb on it. And then the Jackson Audio, that Bellstar pedal. That was it. Super clean. And then I used a lot of compression on some of the songs since it was a lot of funky stuff. He's the same one that Corey Wong uses. I love his tone. Corey Wong.
I love his tone too, dude.
He's got that really good like suit and tie kind of.
Wait, have you checked out his guitar plugin? on for like Logic?
Oh no, I haven't. But
it is awesome, dude. It is awesome.
Is it the one that the Wolf compressor? That one?
Yeah. It's called the Neural Corey Wong. I think it's called the Neural Space or something. Corey Wong. It's awesome, dude.
I
use it all the time for guitar stuff, for sessions. If I'm doing everything in the box, it is awesome,
dude. It's very, very good. I love the guy so much. I love his stuff. I met him in Brooklyn. There's this great place called the Brooklyn Bowl out here. I'm sure you know what it is. The Brooklyn Bowl is a bowling alley that you can watch phenomenal national acts at. And he came through, and I was so excited because he's my favorite guitar player. So I said, I got to go see Corey Wong. I said, Corey Wong, John Mayer, are like my two guys. So I said, I got to go see Corey Wong. So I got tickets for me, my brother, and my sister. My brother showed me Wolf Peck and Corey Wong, and that's what inspired me to do this album. And I got to meet him at the show afterwards because he came back out on the stage and I was hanging around. We were still bowling. And I went over and I talked to him, super, super nice guy. And I told him, I said, man, thanks a lot, because I didn't really have much of a fire to go and record anymore. I didn't really care about it too much. And I was like, I heard your stuff, and I was like, that's what I want to do. I was like, that tone, that style is always what I wanted. And like, I was like, that style, I was like, I want to do something just like that. And I was like, I feel like I could do it. So I thanked him. He was super nice, shook my hand. He's like, that's awesome, dude. He's the nicest guy. He was eating peanut butter. It's
interesting that like, we as artists need that little inspiration.
Yeah.
We'll just get like bored. And then you hear somebody and you're like, whole, it just shifts everything.
Yeah, it got me. And that's what the whole album is recorded from. And I was using, I forget, what was it? There's a delay, a compressor I'm using, a Wampler.
Oh, yeah, I've got that on the Prince.
Same one I'm using. That thing is tasty, super, super tight. Just a little bit of that, not too much. A little bit of compression from that is on a bunch of these songs.
Well, let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
A few Orange Pineapple Blast. That's a good one.
All right, we'll talk about the name afterwards. This is Orange Pineapple Blast by Saucy Valentine. We'll be right back. very funky, dude.
That's funky.
Let me ask you, no vocals. How come you didn't want to put any vocals on it?
To be honest, I did not want like these songs. Originally, I had no songs with any words on it. I was like, I just want to do an instrumental record because in the last few years, I've grown so much more as an instrumentalist and a guitar player.
Right.
Even though I love writing songs. I love having my songs that I write. Like, Make Your Head Up's a really good one. Like other ones like that. I was like, I really want to focus more on being like just being in the music and being with a killing band and like not worrying about singing and just kind of taking a back seat. Like that song. I'm most of the guitar is taking a back seat because the best thing with like funk guitar, especially like the popcorn funk kind of stuff, is like there's real no lead guitar on it. Right. Like the lead is usually held with a vocal line, but most of the time with the keys or maybe a horn section, the way like you play lead as a funk guitar player is through playing tight rhythm and lead rhythm, you know? So like the I'm playing the lick the whole time. You know that, but it's just rhythm guitar.
The great riff. I was the whole time, man.
It's a tight riff. When I came up with that, I was like on a gig, playing with my sister. I have a band with me and my sister and my brother. And
the Zygons. I read your bio.
Zygons, yeah, dude. We're killing. We crush. And so I was playing that, and like my sister was like, "What the fuck was that?" And I was like, I don't know, but can you record that? Because I was like, I think that might be a song. And she recorded it. And like, literally, I was like, the whole song. And then I added in, like, the day before I went to LA, I added in the bum, 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 ba, dum, ba, bum, 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 bum. Something like that. The little walk down. I was like, oh, now it's a song. Okay, cool. Then I can use the riff. And then the boys took it and ran with it. If you hear that first key solo, is insane, dude.
Dude, I was going to ask, what's the patch on that? Do you know?
Dude, I have no idea. That was Brian Hargrove on the keys, and you need to see the video as well with it.
There's the opening lick where he does that ascending line.
Oh my god. Oh, and then he hits like the Star Fox part, like the N64 music, bump a down, bump a do 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 woo. And he was playing the clavinet too. Yeah. Underneath. And then Jerry Mattei is also playing keys. He killed it. He played most of the solos, but Brian came out. And like he wasn't supposed to play that's one take, by the way. That was one take. It took us like five or six to get it together because that was the first song. That was the first song we played together as a at a band. So, he ripped it, and I was just so happy it came out that way. You know what I mean? So he wasn't even supposed to play there, but he came out. That was Brian. I don't know what the patch is. He had a crazy keyboard. He just did his magic and he ripped it.
Well, that's amazing, Mike. It's awesome to see you grow as a musician, as an artist. Let's play your last song before we wrap up. What are you going to leave us with?
This is The Truth. So this is the song I was talking about before, fully improvised vocally. It is a completely improvised vocal song. So I did not write any of the words at all down. They've never been written down. It was one take for the entire band and me to hit it vocally. There is choruses and there are verses and different sections that build. And I did not play guitar in this. Andrew Moore played guitar. I just sang. I came in from outside of the studio, hanging out. I was taking a break because we were in for hours that day. I was taking a little break. This is the fifth song that we did in a row. And I went outside. The guys were playing. And we were all real warmed up by then. And they're playing this thing. And I can't hear anything, you know, in the studio because nothing's coming through except for drums. So I put on the headphones and I waved my arms. I was like, stop. I was like, stop what you're doing right now. Bring it back. Start that again. I'm going to sing on it. And they're like, all right, cool. And the guys talked about it for a second. And then we started and took it from there.
That's crazy.
It's a fully improvised song. All the lyrics are improvised off the top of my head. And they make sense.
Here's The Truth. As jumbled as it sounds like it's going to be, it's awesome. I love it.
Sounds like it's going to be jumbled, but I'm telling you, it's cohesive.
Here's The Truth by Saucy Valentine.
Down away from you, girl.
Find you if they want to find you online.
Oh, dude, you can easily find me on Instagram. It's at mzygon, Z-I-G-O-N, Saucy Valentine as well. And then the Zygons, my group, with my brother and my sister. You can easily find us at all those places. And all that stuff that you just heard, all that Saucy Valentine stuff, is available on every single conceivable streaming network that exists.
And before you go, you got to tell us, what's the name of Saucy Valentine mean, and what's the name of the orange pineapple? What's the meaning behind this?
So, orange pineapple blast.
1 minute. 1 minute.
I got it. It's easy. Orange pineapple blast is the name of Cactus Cooler, the soda.
That's awesome. I love Cactus Cooler, dude.
Well, I was crushing them in the studio because they don't have them in New York. They only exist in California. So I was like, oh, that's the name of this song. Let's hit it. The only song with a name before I came back to New York was that one. That was the only one that would do, Orange Panel Blast. And then Saucy Valentine was a – I took actually one night I was playing a gig here in town in the summer, and it happened to be like a huge packed out night. It was ridiculous. And it was so much fun. My buddy came through and played sax out of nowhere, and I'd eaten a bunch of mushrooms that night. And I was like just tripping out, having the best time of my life, playing music with my buddy. And I'm in front of like a whole bunch of people. And I just was saying, hey, guys, we're Saucy Valentine. That's the name of our band. My middle name is Valentine. My name is Michael Valentine Zygon. So I came up with Saucy Valentine that night.
Love it. Love it. Mike, you're as good of a Muppet as you were when I first met you. And from your Muppet songwriting teacher from ages ago, it's great to reconnect with you. It's great to just always hear music from you. And, man, we'll have to reconnect in person and share a donut burger. We'll have to share a donut burger, dude.
That's that. Okay. I thought it was once in a lifetime. But I guess twice in a lifetime.
Twice in a lifetime. So good. I love you, man. And keep making some music. And let's jam sometime. All right.
Yeah, dude. I'll be back in LA this fall. I'm coming awesome. Back as long as everything's cool with the pandemic.
We'll make sure it is.
I hope so.
On behalf of Sam, myself, and Mike Zygon, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Mike, take care of yourself and your family, and we'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.